When you hear about the end times, what do you think of? The Antichrist? A one world government? Maybe the rapture? Or do you think of Israel? You see, Israel is at the heart of end times prophecy. Yet we focus more on the US, Russia, maybe even Rome, rather than the heart. But if you want to measure where we stand in relation to the end times, then look to Israel. And this is what we'll be discussing today on West Clouds Rising. I am Joel Michael, and welcome to West Clouds Rising, a site dedicated to biblical prophecy concerning the end of this age. When we read end times books and articles today, many focus on the Gentile nations. But when we read about the World Economic Forum, digital currencies, AI, vaccines, Russia, Ukraine, and China, we're only viewing the periphery. These are intriguing end times relevant topics, but they're not at the core of end times prophecy. Israel is. Ultimately, end times prophecy is about Jesus as king over the earth, the restoration of Israel, the judgment of the nations, and the redemption of those who love God, both Jews and Gentiles. Therefore, we must keep our eyes on Israel. Now, the mere existence of the state of Israel is a miracle, only possible through God's hands, as foretold by Isaiah, but it only holds a fraction of its promised borders. And as the prophets foretold, it is surrounded by enemies who want to destroy it. So today, Israel is in turmoil, shaken by political infighting, local Arab conflicts, and external threats. But rest assured that this is all aligned with prophecy. And in a short time, we will see amazing events occur through the power of God. So let's look at what God promised, what is happening now, and what is soon to come. Now, most of these prophecies relate to the land and the people, their enemies, and the Messiah. For starters, I'm going to talk about Genesis 15, and this is where God laid out the borders of Israel, and he provided that their borders would extend from the river of Egypt as far as the great river Euphrates. Of course, they only inhabit a portion of this land today. As you know, the river Euphrates extends all the way into Iraq. Second, the Jews would be regathered from the nations and given a new heart. And this can be found in many places, but in particular Ezekiel 36 and Deuteronomy 30. Now, we have seen this partial regathering, but we have not seen a full regathering of the nations, and I'll talk more about that later. Next, the Jews will recognize Jesus as their Messiah. That is in Zechariah 12, and clearly that has not fully happened yet. Another one is one Jesus spoke of, which is a point in time in which the Gentiles will no longer trample Jerusalem underfoot. And that is mentioned in Luke 21. And most importantly, God promised that a descendant of King David would rule on the throne from Jerusalem in an everlasting kingdom. That also can be found in multiple places, but 2 Samuel 7, you'll find it, Jeremiah 23, and Hosea 3. Now, these prophecies remain unfulfilled primarily for one reason. See, the Israelites never received the full extent of these promises because of their disobedience. This started with failing to remove all the former inhabitants from the land of Canaan when they first came into it. Now, because of this, the Canaanites contaminated the Israelites' beliefs and practices to serve pagan gods. And this contamination led to further disobedience, and God gradually took their land from them. Now, God brought about this regathering. Today, most Jews don't know their Messiah, and so they still have what the Bible refers to as a heart of stone, and Paul refers to this in Romans 11. It also can be found in Ezekiel 36. Now, before Jesus' return, there will be a final scattering of the Jews from Israel, and this is certainly sad to think about. We see the Jews coming back into Israel. We see the blessings they brought upon the land, turning it from desert to growth. And this is what prophecy says, that there will be a scattering that occurs with the war of Gog and Magog. And this is a war that's referred to in Ezekiel 38. Now, in this invasion of Israel by the Antichrist, half the city will be exiled. That's in Zechariah 14. The other half will remain, but only one third will survive, according to Zechariah 13. Now, however, the survivors, the good news is that the survivors will be refined by fire. They'll be refined by these trials, and they will come to recognize Jesus as their Messiah and become his people. And that can also be found in Zechariah 13. At that point, you see many of the events of Revelation occur, and then the time of the Gentiles will end with the triumphant arrival of Jesus as king. And this will fulfill Luke 21:24 and the prophecies of the descendant of David ruling from the throne in Jerusalem. And Jesus will regather the exiled flock, restore the land, and give them a heart of flesh, and they will be his people. And while these things have yet to come, today we see much prophecy being fulfilled each and every day in the news. Now, while take, for example, the war described in Zechariah 12, we already see the conditions rising as precursors to this war, or the war of Gog and Magog. Zechariah 12:2-3 states, "Behold, I am going to make Jerusalem a cup that causes reeling to all peoples around. It will come about in that day that I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all the peoples. All who lift it will be severely injured, and all the nations of the earth will be gathered against it." We see this today. We see the world coming against Israel, especially concerning the Palestinians. According to UN Watch, from 2015 through 2022, the UN General Assembly adopted 140 resolutions against Israel. Now, in comparison, it's only issued 68 against other countries. So Israel, not Iran, not Syria, North Korea, Afghanistan, Venezuela, China, or Russia. In fact, in 2022, the count stood at 15 resolutions against Israel and only 13 against every other country worldwide. So just think, Russia itself, which invaded a neighboring country, shelled civilian structures, dug mass graves, and sent out a massive exodus of people from Ukraine, has less than half of the resolutions against them as Israel, at only 6. Now, Hamas and other Islamic jihadists periodically fire missiles into Israel, and Israel does its best to retaliate responsibly. They target terrorist strongholds and weapons caches while trying to avoid civilian deaths. And this is extremely difficult because the Palestinian terrorists hide these weapons among civilians and civilian structures. And though the Oslo Accords were supposed to bring peace in exchange for land concessions, they failed miserably. And the current administration continues to push these land for peace deals and a two-state solution, but they are destined for failure as well. Why is this? Well, it's because the Palestinian leadership is not interested in having a share of the land. They want all of the land. So if you've ever read any articles coming out of countries related to Palestine, you'll often hear the phrase, "from the river to the sea." And this is a motto that they consistently state. But what this phrase translates to is the complete removal of Israel. Now, in late March, PLO National Council member, and I'm probably mispronouncing some things along the way, but Fasil Abu Qadra stated, "We have only one solution, namely to fight the racist Zionist army with Palestinian blood so that Palestine returns to us and we return to all of Palestine from the river," again meaning the Jordan River, "to the sea," the Mediterranean Sea, "and from Rashrash, which is Eilat, to Al-Nakura," which is basically referring to the Israeli-Lebanese border. Now he added, "The Palestinian leaders should be ashamed that they continue to weep over the Nakba," which is referring to the granting of land to Israel. "They have attained only 22% of historical Palestine." Now, I'm not insinuating that every Palestinian has this view, but it is a widespread view that you hear in articles, speeches, and other communications from surrounding countries or leaders within the Palestinian territory as well. Here's some other quotes from opinion pieces from Jordan and Qatar. So this first quote comes from an article in Jordan Daily, and it's referring to Ramadan. It says, "It is the month of jihad, the month of shahada," which is martyrdom, "the month of istishhad," which is martyrdom seeking. "It is the month of conquests and of great battles. tear up the documents of normalization and subordination to Israel, and sever the ties with the descendants of the Jews. Clearly, they are equating Ramadan as a time for them to attack, take back land, and fight against Israel. You see this also in an article in Qatari Daily. And some of these I'm paraphrasing and skipping so that to make it more succinct, but expel the Israelis from Huwara to Tel Aviv, from the river to the sea, make it so that they will never be safe, not in Jerusalem, not in Tel Aviv, and not in their settlements. And these are strong statements, but this is fairly consistent with what you will hear in such communications. And if it's not widespread, it will be, because this type of teaching is taught even to children. It's in children's textbooks and cartoons. For example, there's one here that came out recently. And Turkey tends to be a spread of these types of cartoons, but this cartoon is from a Turkish media company. And it basically tells the children of the world that the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the Islamic mosque on the Temple Mount, is in danger. And it's basically a bird goes and tells a girl and asks this girl to go spread this to all the children. And it asks the children to come to the mosque before it's too late, as if this thing's in danger of Israel taking it over. And then it ends by saying, it shows kids in this standing together, and they say, "We are all Al-Aqsa soldiers." Now, this type of messaging inspires disenchanted Palestinians to act against Israel. And we see this playing out today. It is certainly a time of heightened tension right now in Israel during the month of Ramadan. We see violence on the Temple Mount. There has been violent clashes erupting between police and Palestinians in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. There's one article here that was in the Jerusalem Post about how Palestinians barricaded themselves in the mosque. They fired fireworks and threw stones at Israeli forces who entered the mosque. Now, these people are pawns. They were told, there's rumors that start a lot of times. So in this case, there was a rumor that started that Israel was going to keep the Arabs from entering the mosque. And so they gathered in there, and they bring fireworks and stones and things to basically act as weapons against the police. And the police, seeing this riotous group come together, seeing them intent on violence, they see that them carrying stones and fireworks, they try to disperse them. And of course, this then leads to an escalation. But every day there's reports of violence as this month continues. Now, this event I just described occurred on the eve of Passover. We see these events happening throughout many parts of Israel. We see riots and violent clashes breaking out in Arab areas in Jerusalem. And in various other cities. There have been dozens of rioters throwing stones and burning fires. In Abu Tor, Palestinian Arabs threw fireworks, ROPs, and Molotov cocktails at Jewish homes. And in other cities, such as Nazareth, police arrested 12 people for rioting. They set fires, threw stones and fireworks, and attempted to block roads. Meanwhile, Hamas and Hezbollah fired rockets at Israel from Gaza and Lebanon on Passover. According to the Jerusalem Post, at least 36 missiles came from Lebanon, and over 40 were fired from Gaza as the IDF struck at least 10 targets, including tunnels and weapons production facilities in Gaza. And now something new in escalation here is that Syria joined in as well and fired 6 rockets into Israel. And then just days ago, a terrorist in Tel Aviv killed 1 person and wounded 7 in a shooting and ramming attack. And in the Jordan Valley, a terrorist shot and killed 2 Israelis and injured 1. Now, we can be sure that this is not over and that there will be continued escalation over Ramadan. The fact is, Israel is surrounded by enemies. As a PLO leader stated, "Thank Allah, Palestine is surrounded by the ring countries, 4 Arab countries that can help the Palestinian people, and beyond them by the other Arab countries, and most of which support the Palestinian people because it deserves freedom, independence, and the expulsion of the occupier." Now, this is the condition today, and this condition will lead to war as foretold nearly 2,600 years ago. And what I'm referring to here is the prophecy in Ezekiel 38, the war of Gog and Magog, which I mentioned earlier. This is the exact scenario that describes. It describes the surrounding nations invading Israel, led by a despicable leader from the Turkey-Syria region. And this may not be too far off. Turkish President Erdogan once said in a speech, "Unfortunately, we, the Muslims, lost our aim to head towards Jerusalem. The water of our eyes froze, making us blind, and our hearts that were destined to beat for Jerusalem are now instead conditioned for rivalry, being in a state of war with each other." Now, I want to remind you what God said. He said, "He has sent me against the nations which plunder you, for he who touches you," referring to Jerusalem, "touches the apple or pupil of his eye." Now, it's just reported in Jerusalem Post that in response to tensions on the Temple Mount, Erdogan, I know some people say Erdogan, I've been told from people that visited Turkey recently that the Turkish people pronunciated Erdogan, told his Iranian counterpart, Ebrahim Raisi, on a call that the Islamic world should be united against Israel's attacks in Palestine. Again, it's always Israel's fault. No matter who starts the shooting, the Islamic world will always blame Israel and use it as an excuse to come against and unite against Israel. So why does all this happen in Israel? Why is the enemy, why is Satan so intent on destroying and disbanding Israel? Now, the reason is that Israel is in the center, the very center of God's plans, and it always has been. It's always been about Israel first. Israel is described as an unmovable stone that the nations will rage against. And though it will see the darkest of times, it will also see the glory of God. It is in Israel where Jesus will return in great glory to destroy the armies of the Antichrist. He will stand on the Mount of Olives with his holy ones and destroy all who gather against him. His angels will throw the beast and the false prophet into the lake of fire and imprison Satan in the abyss for 1,000 years. And these angels will throw the beast's armies into the winepress of God, and they will become food for the birds of the earth. And Jesus will rule the earth as king from Jerusalem over a 1,000-year Sabbath. There'll be a new temple, and the world's nations will come to Jerusalem annually to worship him and celebrate the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkot. This is the feast where God dwells among us. Israel will be at peace, and the world will be at peace. So whatever troubled times we live in today, and the worsening trouble that is coming ahead, we know we have a more glorious future. So run the race well. We're nearing the finish line. And while we must live in this broken world today, we must keep our eyes on what lies ahead. If you like this podcast, please follow West Clouds Rising, and please share it with anyone you think may be interested. And if you wish to read the blog posts, you may find them at www.westcloudsrising.com. Thank you for listening.